Number 2A.
Okay. Now, we tried yesterday in one and the other way to see what the development of the spiritual idea is and how things are in a constant flux, that there is a development in the order towards spirit. And we want to see a few more such... some other parameters in order to see that we really are at the focal point where something is going to change in a big way, that from every side we feel that something is happening that is of an extraordinary measure, and we want to see what that is. So I take another parameter by showing how the idea of religion and science has developed quickly and where it focuses today. We know that civilization, as we said, is mostly regarded as starting around about 4000 BC, and also the biblical layout of the 1000-year period starts at that point with 4000 BC. And comes up now towards the end of the 6000 BC. That is a very long time, and yet a very short time. It's a long time humanly. Cosmologically, it's a very short time. So that civilization, as we are engaged in today, is something that in the cosmological calendar, you know, the cosmological calendar is that calendar where you take the whole time from the Big Bang and reduce it to 1 year and then see what happens within that 1 year. And within that 1 year, really civilization just started in the last few minutes on New Year's Eve. So it has taken 30 million times that time to bring forth civilization. Did I put that clearly? If you take the time of those 6,000 years and compare it with the 15, 18 billion years since the Big Bang, then it has taken 30 million times that time from the period of civilization to bring civilization forth. Just gives a sense that civilization just happened right now, and always with a sense that I feel we must consider that it happened right now, we are at the transitionary stage and must not consider our present situation as something final, but something as is in transition. Even only then, when we feel we are in a transitionary stage, we are also ready to leave old concepts behind and see that something new is coming to happen, which we don't know, but which we have to feel out what it may be. In regard to the 7,000-year periods that would cover the period of civilization, we have an interesting thing to which we notice that in the middle of those 7,000-year period, and after 3,500 year, really something very big happened. And what happened there, I would like to bring out with what one of our European historian, philosopher, well-accepted, well-esteemed man called Karl Jasper. Jasper writes J-A-S-P-E-R. Don't read the book. It's a long book. It's not necessary. It's also, I think, translated in English. But he wrote a few decades ago a book on the origin and aim of history. And in that book, he makes that main point that in the round about the year 500 BC, which would be right in the middle of the 7,000-year period, that right at that period, something happened universally which has a common trait. Namely, round about that time, all the great religions have come forth. In those great religions which could survive today, which did not disappear today. And all these came up independent of each other at the same time. And he calls that time around about 500, 600 BC, he calls the axis of universal history. At that axis of universal history, the great religions were born. In China, I go from China then to the West. In China, we had Confucius, you say, huh? And Lao Tse. Do I pronounce these terms rightly in English? Yes. Then in India, we had the Upanishads. Call them also Upanishads or Upanishads. I don't know. Upanishad appeared. Buddha lived at that time. Then further to the west in Persia, we had Zarathustra, either the real Zarathustra or the renewing of Zarathustra's idea that were much older. Then in Palestine, we had all the prophets popping up in that time. And in Greece, something quite a little different, and that makes the idea most interesting. We had there the philosophers of the first scientists popping up. So that religion and science were born in a great way at that axis of world history. Now, since then, those two strains of human thought that characterized mostly civilization, religions, and science, they then began either to melt or to separate themselves period after period, that they first wanted to melt to one another. You had at the time of Jesus, you had that Greek philosopher Philo, who tried really to wed the Judaic religion with Greek philosophy. He was quite a man and quite an interesting man, trying what Mrs. Eddy afterwards tried to do, to wed Christianity with science and science with Christianity. He did it with the Judaic religion. Then, as you all know, just in big lines, you know, that then the church took over the department of science. The church defined, religion was defining what is science and what is not science, up to that great turning point in the Renaissance, where little by little the scientific thinkers were really trying to separate themselves from the religion anyway, not to be subordinate to the Catholic religion. We have then all those names within a very short time, like Copernicus, like De Bono, like Kepler, like Galilei. They all came up around about the same century and were trying to show that really science is an independent line of thinking and should not be dominated by the church. Though one always must remember that exactly those people who have such a good and great name even today were very religiously minded. For instance, Galilei, I remember, wrote a letter to a friend and said, well, God has written two books, the Bible and nature. So he could see that from the same source stems both religion and science. Then you know that then afterwards there was separation between church and science, until finally science was something all by itself, completely separated from the church, no more under the domination of the church, especially then in the French Enlightenment period and the French rationalists, and then Descartes, Newton, and so on. They are no more under the jurisdiction of the church and were culturing science in their own way. But we have also seen that in the last century, or no, not in this century actually, there is again a new development taking place, that more and more, as scientists investigate nature, the book of nature, that they find that that book of nature has something to do with the book of God, that is the Bible, that they can't put God out of the of science, and that there is a tendency, as we have seen, towards incorporating science, religion, or God, or the concept of God, not the concept of the God that has a beard and sits on cloud nine, but the concept of an evolving God into the scientific thinking. Which brought this man, Carl Jasper, which said, well, around about 500 BC, there was an axis in world history, that he begins to think that he says today that a new axis period must appear. You see, he could see that somehow a certain development has come to an end, that something quite different must start. A new axis period must appear. And he says, if Western world is to survive, and sometimes we think it can't, if Western world would have to survive, then there must be a successful revival of biblical religion in a new form. And you can see again that trend, that he feels there is another axis period, now that we are coming to the 7,000-year period, that that new axis period will bring about something new, and he defines that new as a revival of biblical religion, but not in the old Orthodox form, but in a new form. Well, I think Christian Science has done that. I think Christian Science has wedded science to Christianity and Christianity to science, but it has done it in a completely new form. And this is what we are witnessing today. And so we can say, really, the biggest thing that happened since the prophetic age, since that axis of world history, is really the appearing of Christian Science. Perhaps we feel, well, this is hardly possible, because there is a strong feeling that the church, especially the Roman church, is so strong and is so adamant to all the scientific discoveries that this doesn't seem to be a sign today that religion and science will come together. Well, this is perhaps so if we look at it superficially, just number-wise, just perhaps at Catholicism as it is practiced, perhaps in the second world and third world. But one sees today that, especially in Catholicism, there are people that are putting out their necks and say, well, we are not going along anymore with what Rome is doing. Just recently, I listened to a radio program, an interview, which perhaps may be interesting for you, because it's so put in such general terms and in such a surprising way. One has really the feeling that something is going on. You know very well that in Germany many of the great Catholic theologians are in controversy with the Pope, that they have been penalized, that they have been not quite excommunicated, but they are no more allowed to teach, and they are the ones that are most esteemed now in Europe, because we feel that they are really seeing the new light. Well, in one of these interviews, which I quickly want to summarize, you can see that even in the Catholic Church, there is a great tendency to free themselves and see that there is a new axis period where we have to look at the Bible in a different and new way. I speak about a professor of Catholic theology, an elderly man, 75, he's retired now. He is not just a professor, he's a very well-known man who has written with other professors a Bible dictionary, so he has spent a good deal of his life in scientific research together with other men. He also was a professor together with Paul Kung. I hope this name is well known over here. Paul Kung is, so to say, the exponent of the revolution against papalism, against Rome, and he is well known all over the world. He is also the one who is best known as an economical, ecumenical, that's the title, huh? Mediator between Christianity, Islam, Judaism. And so this Professor Kung, the Professor Haag, H-A-A-G, said in this interview something that really threw me off my chair. Not only because of what he said, but because also of a parallelism with another church that we know. His main point was that he said there is a great discrepancy between institutionalized church on one side and Bible teaching on the other side. So there is a gap between institutional church and Bible teaching. He said very clearly, he said, Jesus preached not a single dogma. Jesus had no intention to organize a church. The Bible teaches no church officers. The Bible teaches no ecclesiastical hierarchy. So he goes on and says, in an organized church, the situation is like this, that the structure of the hierarchy is essential, not the Bible, that the dogma becomes central. The officers in the church, in the hierarchy, they decide what is true and what is false theology. It is they that measure it, if it's true or not, according to the established dogma and not according to the Bible. And if anyone in the Roman Church brings up new ideas, these ideas are evaluated not according to the Bible, but according to the dogmas that the Church itself has established. The teachers are subordinated to the Church officers, not to the Bible. They are controlled and disciplined by the Church officers, not by the truth they know from the Bible. And so he ends and says, well, truth cannot be dictated by a church authority. Well, what is his conclusions about it? That he says, well, even in Rome, there is a great discrepancy between words and deeds, because it says the church openly declares that it stands for the men rights, but it doesn't practice it. Namely, there is no equality of women and men in the church. And if the employees in the Vatican don't get enough pay, they go on strike. So it's not different than in the world. So he says at the end, the church will dissolve itself. It can't go on the way it goes on. And he says, it dissolves itself, and the quicker, the better. A new church must evolve. So this, you see, he goes into the same line as Karl Jasper with a new world axis. A new church must evolve. A new Christianity is necessary. What kind of Christianity is necessary? One that is built on the Bible and on the gospel teaching. The question is, when will it happen? He says, well, that I cannot answer. I cannot answer when it will happen. He only says, but it will happen. That's by certain. And finally, his last sentence was that the Bible will be discovered anew by Christians. So after 2,000 years of preaching the Christian doctrines, he says, well, now the Bible will have to be discovered anew and by Christians. If we think what we have been doing last year in the summer school and investigating the Gospel of St. John, we really could see that we have been discovering the Bible anew. We have been discovering the Bible. No one in the last 2,000 years of all those intelligent people in the world has been seen. That we see the Bible completely in a new way, as it has never been seen. And I think we can't be grateful enough that somehow through grace we are led to know about the key to the scripture, that we know about John Dorley, who has explained the key to the scripture and has really reopened, decoded, so to say, the Bible, and has put it not into a religious dogma, but has put it into a science of the Bible. This is a terrific accomplishment. We must stand in awe before that. We can see that really what happened with Mrs. Eddy and John Dorley in this last century, that this is really that which the development of the spiritual idea right through from the beginning of the birth of the great religion was trying to achieve. Namely, to bring out the science of religion and not the religious sense of religion and the purely academic sense of science. But that those two go together, that there is no duality in religion and science, but that it is one and the same thing. Yes. So again, we see that there is a feeling in the world that we are right at the point of a new transition, that the new Christianity is waiting around the corner, and actually we know what that Christianity is. We are so fortunate, whereas others don't know what that new Christianity is. They only know that there must be a new Christianity. That's actually a great step forward to come to that point. Okay, now I want to go to another parameter and look at another line of development. And I do that always with one aim, naturally, that Mrs. Eddy says, that important sentence, that the rays of infinite truth, it's a plural, the rays, it's not only one ray, the rays of infinite truth, when gathered together into the focus of ideas, and all these rays come together, the more rays come together into the same focus, then they bring light instantaneously. Whereas, she says, 1,000 years of human hypotheses and doctrines and conjecture emit not such light. So we have to see, can we really see that at the present moment we are somehow drawing towards such a focus where all the various lines of development in the world come together for the same purpose, or the one and the same purpose, to bring out a spiritual Christianity, really the point of view that we evolve in the order of spirit until thought is spiritualized to such an extent that we can really see that all is spirit, and that the only science is therefore the science of spirit. So in this way we combine really the religious side, spirit, the divine side, spirit, with the scientific side, that all is spirit and not all is matter.